Pre-legislative stage. Proposals for new Acts of Parliament come from different sources. The most recognisable of these resides in the government as a result of pledges made in an election manifesto. These are more explicitly stated when the Sovereign speaks at the opening of a session of Parliament, the Queen's speech outlining the government's plans for legislation. Legislative proposals may also come from other sources, such as the organised lobbying groups or pressure groups that campaign for new legislation. These groups, exempli gratia Greenpeace and CBI, can bring benefits to law reform by informing and assisting the legislature on the need to consider changes to particular aspects of law which are desirable. As a result, they improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the lawmaking process. Other proposals come from the various advisory committees and commissions established to advise the government, known as advisory agencies. These agencies may be either standing or permanent bodies or ad hoc or temporary bodies. The most important standing agency is the Law Commission, which plays an important role in stimulating debate about the state of the law with a view to its systematic development and reform, including codification, removal of anomalies, and repeal of obsolete enactments. Ad hoc agencies, exempli gratia the Royal Commissions, are established to investigate and report on one specific area of law. Once the report is made, the commission will be disbanded, it breaks up and stops functioning. Again, the use of such agencies with their high degree of expertise is to enhance the efficiency and effectiveness of the legislative process. Individual members of Parliament, MPs, also play a vital role. They put forward discussion for new legislation in Parliament, known as private members' bills. These are introduced by ordinary MPs and are based upon suggestions by pressure groups or recommendations from an advisory agency. Public bills, on the other, are introduced by the government ministers on matters of general concern. Once the government has adopted a new legislative proposal, a consultation period follows. This involves publishing a discussion document in the form of either a green paper or white paper as part of the command papers series, so called because in theory they are presented by Her Majesty's command, in practice by a minister. A green paper is used to announce proposals for consideration and public discussion, while a white paper announces government policy or principles for implementation of the bill. There are also blue books, which are government publications of committees and commissions, such as those of a royal commission. Consultation is useful in gauging the level of the government's interest in a particular area and ensuring the efficient, effective, and democratic nature of the process. Drafting and enactment. Following the consultation period, the legislative proposal must be set out in a draft legislation, known as a bill, which is drafted by expert civil servants in the Office of Parliamentary Counsel. This bill must then pass through the process of enactment, the passing of legislation. It is only if it is passed by both the House of Commons and the House of Lords and receives the royal assent that it will become an Act of Parliament. While a bill may first be announced to either House, controversial bills usually commence in the House of Commons. The various stages of enactment are as follows. First reading. The title of the bill is introduced into the House, id est, It is read out by the Clerk of the House from a dummy bill, and copies are made available to MPs who are informed about the proposed legislation. No debate or vote takes place at this stage. A day is named for second reading. Second reading. This is the first general debate on the main principles and purpose of the bill in the House. In this debate, front bench government ministers and their opposition counterparts make the opening and closing speeches. The rest of the debate is given over to the MPs, the backbench MPs. Amendments to the bill's provisions are not made at this stage, but the bill can be rejected by being refused a second reading. If more than 20 MPs wish to object to the bill, there is a vote. Committee stage. This is the stage at which the bill is debated in detail, clause by clause. This is normally done by a standing committee of MPs, though it may also be done by the committee of the whole House, full House sitting as a committee. At this stage, the bill may be amended. This sharing out of bills allows them to proceed more quickly, thereby improving efficiency. Report or consideration stage. This stage provides an opportunity for members who were not part of the committee debating the bill to consider any of the amendments made by the committee. Thus, the committee reports its proceedings to the whole House. Any amendments made in committee will be either accepted or reversed. Third reading. This is a further general debate on the bill in the House of Commons in its final amended form. Substantive amendments cannot be made at this stage. Only minor technical amendments are allowed. Once the bill has passed the third reading in the House, that is, the House of Commons, it is referred to the House of Lords, where it is introduced with a new bill number. The process in the House of Lords is very similar to the process in the House of Commons. The bill then proceeds for royal assent, which is again a purely formal stage. Upon receipt of royal assent, the bill becomes an Act of Parliament. The provisions of the Act may either take effect immediately or do so upon a date specified in the Act itself. Alternatively, the provisions may come into force upon the issuing of a commencement order by the appropriate minister. Citation of statutes. There are different forms of referring to an Act of Parliament. They are the short title. This is a short description by which the Act may be cited. In a recent Act, the short title is given by the Act itself, usually the citation clause, for example, section 25 of 2005 C14 reads, "This Act may be cited as the Railways Act 2005. The official citation. Each Act passed in any one year, calendar year, is given its own chapter number passed in that year. For example, 2005, chapter 14. Chapter is the official citation, may be abbreviated to C. The long title. This sets out in general terms the purpose behind the statute. It usually begins with the words, an act to. For example, the full title of the Justice Northern Ireland Act 2002 encompasses more than one purpose. It reads, an Act to amend Part 1 of the Justice Northern Ireland Act 2002 to make further provision concerning the Public Prosecution Service established by that Act, to impose a new duty on certain criminal justice organisations in Northern Ireland in relation to human rights standards. The royal assent or date of passing. This appears in square brackets after the long title, which means that statutes become law on the date when they receive the royal assent endorsement. The significance of the royal assent is that, unless the Act says otherwise, it is also the date of commencement, the date when the Act takes effect. This Act shall come into force on such day as the Secretary of State by order appoints. The enacting formula or purview. This is shown by the introductory words expressing the nature of the Act as a command or force of law of the sovereign legislature, namely the Queen in Parliament. In modern English statutes, enacting words immediately follow the long title and date of royal assent and run as follows. Be it enacted by the Queen's Most Excellent Majesty by and with the advice and consent of the Lords Spiritual and Temporal and Commons in this present Parliament assembled and by the authority of the same as follows. In addition, the main body of a modern statute is divided into sections. Each section contains a different rule of law and is often abbreviated to S. Sections are further subdivided into subsections using a system of numbering 1, 2, 3, etc., and lettering A, B, C of paragraphs, abbreviated to para. The purpose of which is to enable provisions to be referred to easily, especially if they are set out in a list of contents at the beginning of the Act. Headings. Each heading gives a brief description of the contents of each section or part, without having to read it in full. Schedules. Some statutes have schedules, abbreviated to SCHED, at the end, the content of which varying as to whether they contain detailed provisions not found in the body of the statute, or reminders, summaries of, or changes to legal rules. Definitions. There are different methods of defining words and phrases in statutes. Among these you may find definitions which restrict the meaning of a word. The definition is restricted to its narrower, intended meaning of the statute. In this Act, notice means a notice in writing. The definition may, however, also restrict the meaning to a particular area. In this Act, land means land in England and Wales, except for Northern Ireland. Or time. Lease means a lease for 21 years. Or there may be definitions which extend the meaning of a word. The definition extends the ordinary legal meaning of a word, therefore including a meaning which would not normally fall within it. For the purposes of this Act, parental rights include any parental duty or responsibility. Similarly, the definition may give a word an extraordinary meaning which could not be attributed to it in ordinary usage. In this section, house includes caravan, ship, and vessel. As noted, while statutory definitions rely on the ordinary meaning of the word or phrase and stipulate a particular meaning, as we have seen, stipulative definitions, in order to gain clarity and precision in the drafting process of statutes, they may be used together with headings and schedules by the court as aids to interpretation.